the first thing we need you to do is to identify yourself, please.
My name is Dwight Woolley.
I think I've heard of you.
Have you?
I think so. And I'm now going to tell you how old I am by way of a statement and a question.
That you heard of me a long time
ago. It was
ago.
Syracuse, New York.
Back in Julius Caesar's time.
Close. Yeah, it was the, actually, I heard you on a rickshaw for the first time, and it was, and the rickshaw had good sound.
Oh, good.
Had a Bose system. I don't like Bose. Yeah. Never mind. Bose is bad. Syracuse, New York, fall 1975. Dennis mm-hmm. is a freshman in college. I was listening to, I kid you not, the radio station was called Wolf, W-O-L-F. And Wolf Radio, and all the DJs had the low voice, and they'd say, "On Wolf!" And they did, and they'd do that, and it was the funniest thing. And suddenly this song called I'm on Fire mm-hmm. came blasting out of the radio, and I literally rushed out to buy that 45 within seconds. Now, you would think that was enough. And then 1979, I'm in grad school mm-hmm. in Boston, and I'm listening to WBCN, mm-hmm. and this song called Somebody to Love comes out of the radio, and I say, holy, fill in the blank here, you know. So that was only 4 years, but that's kind of my history with you, is these are two iconic songs to me. So when I heard you were appearing here, I immediately tracked down what it took mm-hmm. to get here. So let's talk about all of the, not the people who influenced you, but let's talk about all the bands that are sitting here at South by Southwest that you're going to go see and say, I hear that riff, I hear that vocal. Gosh golly, where'd they get that from?
Well, you know, I don't ever listen for that. And I know that I've been an influence on a number of people and music.
Well, I learned something, and I wonder if you know this, you know, because do you hate it when you are categorized in a certain way, like the power pop label?
Oh, that is just so just the most recent. I've been the father of New Wave. You know, I've been all kinds of different titles through the years. It really makes no difference to me. You know, what's good is just being here.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact that people are giving you a label and calling you something. If today it's power pop, fine. Call it what you want. I get the best power pop band that ever existed was the Beatles. And so if I get to fall into that category, I'm a happy camper. I'm fortunate enough that I feel like that I got into the music business in the last days of then that it was really the people that were really into the music. Like my first person signed me was Denny Cordell,
right.
who was responsible for a number of acts. You know,
yeah,
myself,
few.
Tom Petty,
yeah.
Leon Russell.
Right.
You know,
right.
you know, Shelter Records. And I never had a conversation with Denny Cordell about money. And there was never, ever an issue about it. If I want any Shelter artist, including myself, you want to stop in the middle of the day and drop your, you know, hamburger on the floor and go record, there was no discussion about it. You just went and did it. If you're out on the road, you go anywhere in any studio at any time and record.
Right.
And there was no discussion about it. And I remember sitting in, when I first came to Shelter Records, sitting in an office because the publishing company that they had there loved my music, and just walking in, just throwing a recording contract in my lap and said, that's the way I feel about it. You should go see a lawyer. But the thing that I noticed that changed, you know, I was there at the beginning of the change, that a couple years later, this new thing happened, and it wasn't the guy throwing the contract to you and saying, go see the lawyer. It was the lawyer. The lawyer became the guy at the record company. But what's happened today is they've combined the record companies and radio have worked together to destroy themselves.
Yes, and that's why you and I are here. Okay, I'm just curious, just a personal question. You completely re-recorded Somebody to Love when you went to EMI. Was there no choice?
No, it wasn't completely. It was.
But did you choose to go in and change it to a certain extent?
Well, they loved the song. And I was working with Chuck Plotkin. I don't know if you know Chuck Plotkin's mm-hmm. background. He's Bruce Springsteen and
right.
a real good friend of mine. And everybody loved the song. And it was his idea to, he didn't feel it was complete. So I actually wrote a new verse. And we cut a verse out of it. And I sang the new verse. And then we put the verse back into the song.
Right.
And restructured it. And put it out, you know. And I have people. There's kind of ongoing controversy because some people like the old, and some people like the new version.
So let's go into the deep depths before we get to the new stuff. Okay, where am I going to go?
Taxing me here.
Where am I going to go? Who am I about to talk about? God, what would be like knows. The... Come on, what's the most evil thing you can talk evil. About when you're talking about music and radio?
Well, I think didn't I kind of touch on that already?
Oh, let's get deeper.
And record companies.
Let's get deeper.
Together and worked out a way you to were, destroy themselves.
You were kind of a, I don't want to say a victim, but many people were a victim of Mr. Isgro.
I did get taken out on that one.
People who don't know, Joe Isgro was the poster child for Paola.
Well,
the Alan Freed of the era.
Yeah, but undeniably though, he was at the time probably the most powerful record promotion man, you know, in the United States. And when I was at, I just had my most successful album, Jungle, at EMI with the Hit Girls and Why You Wanna Break My Heart and all that, you know. And my main contact at EMI was leaving, and EMI at that time was kind of known for the fact that regardless of the caliber of the artist, they seemed to could never get past one hit. I was Joe Isgro, basically his organization came to me and sort of said, look, you know, the song you have on Jungle too, Why You Wanna Break My Heart, I'm working with EMI on it, and it's a top 10 record, and they're just not gonna do it. And if you can get out of EMI, and I don't know how my management was able to do it, come to our label, and it sounded good at the time. You know, it's a real powerful promotion, and my main contacts were leaving at the time. So hey, you know, and so I went and spent, you know, another year. It was a big follow-up to the Jungle album, and I recorded an album called Wild Dogs. And about 2 weeks before the album was released, there's Joe Isgro on the NBC News, you know, with FBI footage of him, you know, with the Gambino family, and that was the last.
Well, at least he played with the big boys.
That was the last you heard of my record. In fact, it's the last you heard of me for quite a while. Nobody would touch me. I was like, you know, pretty as close as you can be to blacklisted. I was very fortunate. Thing happened to me, and it was called the Northridge earthquake.
Yes, indeed.
I was actually
that you changed your locale.
I don't. It was at recording with Richie Podler and Bill Cooper up at American in Calabasas, and Rocky Burnett, my dear friend, dropped me off at my house. And about,
that's right. You shared a label too.
That's 30 right. minutes later. Yes. My house was destroyed, and we were informed that we had to completely leave the house. I mean, you couldn't stay in your house. You had to get out of your house. It was so badly damaged. And it was at that point that I decided it just didn't seem like the right thing just to move down the block.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you moved back to Tulsa.
I came back to Tulsa, and since then, it just seems like everything started to happen, and I've done so much work and had so much activity. It's just been such a positive thing. I'm so happy, and now I have my own recording studio, and I live close to some of my original, like Bill Pickock IV. And that wasn't a first thought in my mind. I'm going back because some of my players are there. You know, it really wasn't that. But once I got there, I realized, well, hell, some of the greatest musicians in the world live in Tulsa.
What was I doing there?
There's a couple of, you know, there's a phone call away, and here I have my studio, and all of a sudden started making records. And it was also kind of at that standpoint, too, where it was after the Joe Isgro thing there for a couple of years that nobody really wanted to touch me. And you were kind of blacklisted. I was blacklisted kind of for that reason, but also the other thing was like, well, you've already had hits.
You know? Sorry, you can't have any more.
If you've had a hit, you know.
You've had, you do. Forget
it. It was like having gum on the bottom of your shoe or something. There was something wrong with you, you know. And they would say, well, you know, you've already had hits, so you don't have any fans anymore. And I found out, you know, once I got back to Tulsa and I just whacked together a little record called Tulsa, and I discovered, you know what, they're right. I don't have any fans. I just have people all over the world that just love it when I put out a record. Thing is, you know, I've been writing songs for a long time, you know, and it comes very easy for me. To write a song is, you know,
but finding the idea is hard.
Yeah, that's the challenge. You know, that's the most important thing to me is finding, because, you know, songwriting is a communication. and it's saying something that moves people, or saying something that they already know that's said in a way that hasn't been said before. So I'm always searching for that. And so I'm listening to one of those late night talk radio shows where they talk about UFOs and zombies and stuff like that. And there's some scientists on there, and it, you know, and it was just matter of fact, you know, he just happened to, you know, mention that Jupiter has, you know, little Jupiter has 47 moons. And to me, that was just bang. You know,
the what a sound, space program that would be.
The sound of it, the syllables, it, you know, it was beautiful. And I love the word 47. I've used it. I used it on the second album, Totally Don't Mind. There was a song called Rock and Roll 47. And that had to do with the fact that the Musicians Union there was a local 47. And it was just another song, 47, 46, 45. But anyway, I love the syllables, and it immediately made me think, well, we only have one. Jupiter's got 47 moons.
We've been gypped.
I know, we only have one. And then,
that's a lot. You know, we lack, that's why we have a shortage of green cheese.
I'm sure it is. And then the funny thing is next day I wrote the song, and I felt really good about it, and I open up the newspaper, and in the science section, there's a headline, and it reads, "More moons discovered around Jupiter."
And you're like, do we change that? Yeah, right. Do I re-record the darn thing?
So I actually had to go
back. But 49.5 moons just doesn't.
I know.
It spoils the whole darn thing.
So I went back and rewrote a verse, you know, that kind of explains that at one point they thought there were 41, but they'll count 1,000 before they're done. And so there'll be an endless number of moons.
So basically what I could do is that old 60s thing before I played, and the moons just keep on coming.
Yeah, the more moons, the better.
Exactly. Your wife is your recording engineer. Tell me about that dynamic. Who mixes who?
It works both ways.
Who controls the reverb?
Well, I'm the producer.
Okay. All right.
It's, you know.
And should we get her down here? Just...
And sometimes the producer, in some cases, can have control of the wardrobe.
In some cases. But she's turning, well, I guess she's spinning the knobs, but then in the mix, you don't have to, you can still be behind the board, so I would imagine.
Yes, and you know, if there's a particular moment where I'm not quite sounding up to par, and the voice isn't quite at its top-notch peak, you know, the little bit of wardrobe change, or absence of wardrobe, you know, it's stimulating for a recording artist. So it's, you know,
speak of segues. You ready for the next question? Sometimes they just go wonderful. Sometimes you just sit there and they go yes, no, no. The first track that I played off your album, come on, do the segue with me, because you just talked about wardrobe change.
Yeah,
the last, the first track that I played, that I played off the album immediately, was Jackie Naked in the Window.
You did? Yeah. I thought about that too, because, you know, we're so heavily into the digital world, and it's a matter of people looking at a screen and going down through titles, and I thought to myself, because there was some discussion early on about, well, should we just call this song Jackie? And we said, no, because most people are going to look down at the song titles and go, Jackie Naked in the Window, I want to hear that.
I picked it because it was to me the instant play.
Now, come on. Why did you pick it again? Let's be honest here.
Would you like to see a nice picture of my daughter? Just kidding.
Was her name Jackie?
No, Kate, but that's okay.
Katie Naked in the Window.
Yeah, exactly. DMI, the answer to Too Much Plastic?
Too Much Plastic?
Yeah. This whole new way that this album is going to be put out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about it. What do you think?
Oh, well, I'm just very pleased to be in on the ground floor, which is where it's going, because, you know, it is. You know, are you seeing more? The little record stores that you used to go to when you were a kid and wait for the new Beatle record, where are they?
Yeah, I know.
You know, they're not. There's not more of them.
Well, no, you know what? They exist. They exist, but they're not selling new music. They're selling 45s of I'm on Fire.
As long as
they can do that.
Yeah, and I'm not a marketing expert or anything, but information that has came past my door, people are saying that really the number one retailer for your hardcore plastic disc you hold in your hand is Walmart. And so just think about it in your mind. Man, think about all the hip people hanging out at Walmart. I think there's a lot of work done in the business of trying to get rid of people. They want you to be gone.
Yeah.
And there's this guy's few guys like me that they just can't get rid of. You know, they really want to. You know, you get a hit in the 70s, and you know, there were so many people. That just,
Lord help you, a hit in the 70s.
You can't.
The wrong decade.
Well, I know, but you certainly are not going to have a hit in the 80s.
Yeah, you that's know, true.
You couldn't have a hit in the 80s, and then you get a hit in the 80s, and damn it. You know, right. And then you go on, and you get make something happen. You know, you get a Wayne's World in the 90s, and they're darn.
Right, yeah, so yeah, right. How dare you have a hit in each of the decades?
And then come, you know, 2005, you release a record like 47 Moons, and, you know, it just pisses them off.
Too old to rock and roll, too young to die, right?
That sounds good.
Yeah. Last thing that I like to do, and this becomes pretty joyful for people, and I think you're going to have a ball with this, and this is how we fill the rest of the time, and it's pretty fun. I want to do a Dwight Twilley sandwich.
Sandwich.
And here's what we do. Your songs are the bread. Now, you can cheat and do a club, which people have done, which means you can have three songs, you can have bread in the middle, and then I want you to fill the sandwich with any music that you've always wanted to play next to yours, and I will send it to you, and I will segue it exactly as you tell me to.
Oh, you mean like my sandwich would definitely have a Beatles on Rye, and probably with Swiss with Elvis Presley, and the early Elvis, but I still, you know, even the late Elvis with the rain in my shoe. I would want some rain in my shoe on the sandwich, you know. And some of those early 50s productions. I said Dean Martin, didn't I? I actually wouldn't even mind Bee Gees, but everybody would think I'm talking about the disco stuff, but it wouldn't be that.
So give me the, am I doing I Started a Joke, or am I doing Spicks and Specks?
No, more like the obscure, well, I mean, some of the stuff that's close to that, like for something wasn't a hit, You Win Again.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was a terrific record, just terrific, and it wasn't a hit. So there would be, you know, Elvis would almost have to be two parts on my plate. He'd be like a little bit of lettuce, and he could be like the chips on the side, you know? And I don't know, I'm forgetting who the pickle would be.
Yeah. Whoever it is, I'm sure it'll be, if it's a male vocalist, I'm sure he'll be complimented.
Well, you know, it might be Brian Wilson. Might be Brian Wilson. It wouldn't be Bob Dylan. That's too much information.
Yes, you know, yeah.
Not while I'm eating.